Blog Talk Radio.
Mum and Dad and Denny saw the passing out parade at Puckapunyal, the long march from Cadet. 6th Battalion was the next to tour, and it was me who drew the card. We did Canungra and Shoalwater before we left. And Townsville lined the footpaths as we marched down to the quay. This clipping from the paper shows us young and strong and clean. And there's me in me slouch hat with me SLR and green. God help me, I was only 19. From Bungtow riding Chinook to the dust of Newey Dad, I've been in and out of choppers now for months. We made our tent for home VB and pin up on the lockers, and an Asian orange sucked it through the scrub. And can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? A night time's just a jungle dark and a barking M16. And what's this rash that comes and goes? Can you tell me what it means? God help me, I was only 19. Four weeks of operation, when each step could mean your last one on two legs. It was a war within yourself, but you wouldn't let your mates down till they had you dusted off. So you closed your eyes and thought about something else. And then someone yelled out, "Contact!" And the bloke behind me swore. We hooked in there for hours, then a God almighty roar. And Frankie kicked to mind the day that mankind kicked the moon. God help me, he was going home in June. Frankie drinking tinnies in the Grand Hotel on a 36-hour wreck leave in Bungtow. And I can still see Frankie lying screaming in the jungle till the morphine came and killed the bloody row. And the Anzac legend didn't mention Martin's blood and tears, and the stories that my father told me never seemed quite real. I caught some pieces in my back that I didn't even feel. God help me, I was only 19. And can you tell me, doctor, why I still can't get to sleep? And why the Channel 7 chopper chills me to my feet? And what's this rash that comes and goes? Can you tell me what it means? God help me, I was only 19.
Well, welcome to the program today. It's the annual Anzac Day special, delayed by a few days and a few weeks by the wonders of Blog Talk Radio. Here we are. I have a studio. It's really quite exciting. I have a show, and with me along for the ride on this particular Blog Talk show through a team of voices are my good friends and colleagues, Deborah Lee. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you. And I have Hadda here as well. Hi, Hadda. How are you? Well, I think I've got Hadda. Well, I've had Hadda.
That song sounded like that song sounded like you singing it.
Sorry, Hadda, it sounded like
you singing.
Like you
singing it.
I couldn't do much of that at the minute, my voice being what it is, but probably, you know, when it stops being so upset, but thank you. And then this week, hi, sweet, how are you?
I'm good. I would agree with Hadda. That had a bit of AP spin on it.
It did a little, but that was actually Red Gum. It was recorded in 1983, and hit the top of the singles charts here in Australia in 1983, and it was an unusual song because the royalties for the song, which usually would go to the person who wrote the song, actually go to the Vietnam Veterans Association of Australia, which is pretty cool because it's had hundreds of thousands of dollars come in over the length of its playlist in radio around the world. So a brilliant, brilliant song inspired by the Vietnam War and written by a gentleman called John Schumann. So there you go. That's where we've started, but certainly not where we're going to stop. I mean, the Anzac Day is a very special day for Australians and New Zealanders, and we have been involved in many conflicts together, and this all started with our involvement in a ridiculously silly campaign, which was to land in Gallipoli in southern Turkey and then march up Turkey to try and take them out of the war. And it was a ridiculously silly thing to do because the geography of Turkey is incredibly difficult. And a well-organized opponent could basically keep you on the beaches, and that's exactly what happened. To the Australians, to the New Zealanders, to the British, Canadians, who tried to land and make this thing a success, and it just didn't happen. And probably the best thing that actually happened in Gallipoli was that we got out of there, and we did that with not too many casualties. But it was the first time that Australians and New Zealanders had fought together in that way, and it practically was an absolute disaster in terms of people killed and injured. So now, Hadda, I was going to turn to you here because you actually wrote a poem that sort of summarised all of this pretty well, I thought. So I was going to put that up on the board. Now, did you want to read this, Hadda?
You can read it, please. Hey, do you have a memorial in Australia?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, which one have we got here? Hold on. I'll put it up on the board. We've got Awesome Aussie Stuff by Jay Hadda. And I think this sets the context pretty well. So it goes a little bit like this. Me, being an American, would like to thank the soldiers from down under for the ones that never returned. I've learned the numbers. In World War I, with a population of fewer than 5,416,804 Australians enlisted, and 62,000 never came home. In World War II, 10,700 Australians gave their lives fighting to liberate France and Belgium from Hitler's tyrannical regime, and also, I should say, Zagata in Africa too, in the Alps. Australian soldiers met the Japanese in Papua New Guinea in some of the most horrific conditions imaginable, with the terrain always favouring the Japanese. better use of technology, medicines, clothing, and weapons, all jungleized, will eventually turn the battlefield in Australia's favour, and that the US and British victory at Midway prevented the planned invasion of Australia by Japan. Korean War, 336 Australian soldiers failed to return home, 3,700 wounded, and 1,216 POW. In Vietnam, 523 Australian soldiers lost their lives, and 2,400 wounded. This is astonishing, the pierce of war, the sights, the sounds, the devil's whore. Listen to the boob tube, they'll twist your mind, honesty, integrity, responsibility, been left behind. The numbers have names, they also have mothers, fathers, of course, sisters and brothers. Don't call them a number unless you were there fighting for their lives, the stories they share. Have you ever been shot at, machine gunned or bombed? They find out what that's like, and I bet you it's not long. So you can understand what soldiers do for you. Be careful when you say, and you don't have one clue. It's easy to hate, to complain, and disrespect. Try harder to love, to communicate, and better yet, let's not. War is man's inhumanity to man, and only with a few exceptions in nature, we human beings, supposedly intelligent, compassionate, and reasonable, we go to war. We have developed the weapons that can electrify you, blow you up, and vaporize you. If this thing called life is just a game to be played, where there is no one winner and everybody pays, the rule's easy to create peace on earth and the clock is ticking. Who thinks it's in the fourth quarter and you're planning on kicking? Face it, we are doomed, consumed in our own greed. If God was to come, he would burn the fields and start again planting seeds. I don't know how you think it's real, but this time I believe the danger has fuel. Is there not something we could try and answer me this? Where are the good guys? I see the liars, the thieves, the crooks, and their too. I see them planning, contriving, lying to me and you. So I will hope and pray, and I will look for the sky, 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 raising my fist, screaming, but tell me please, where are the good guys? In poem.
God, who wrote that?
Deb, Deb. Deb, what do you make of that piece by Hatter?
You know, Hatter, you packed so much information into this one and presented it in an amazing way. The statistics that you included here are mind-blowing. I like the picture you chose, too, but better use of technology, medicine, clothing, and weapons, all jungleized to eventually turn the battlefield of Australia's favor, and with the U.S. and British victory in Midway prevented the planned invasion of Australia by Japan. Just the details. I loved how you, this was a culmination of everything that you would need to know to realize the significance. Great poem.
Thank you.
Thanks, Deb. And, Sweet, did you want to say a few words about Hatter's poem?
Yeah. If I could say anything about Hatter's poem, it would be leaving me damn near speechless. I grew up very, very much in a military family. My father was in Korea and Vietnam. And, you know, they say war doesn't really affect our generation. But I had a brother go to Afghanistan. So I have a brother before Afghanistan, and I have a brother after Afghanistan. And they are very two different people. And your poem represents that a lot. And so if you know what a soldier is and you know what a life is and how it really affects them, whether it's World War One or the beginning of time, or we don't send a person to war, we don't send a country to war, we don't send all of that. We send that one little mind, that 19-year-old, into something that they're never going to come back out of without, you know, fighting for their lives, the stories they share. Have they ever been shot at, machine gun, or bombed? We never know what that's like. And I think your poem just puts that heaviness to this. And yet, we're so proud of them, and we're so that. So your last line, raising my fist, screaming, tell me, please, where are the good guys? Because, you know, sometimes there's clear enemies. Like, you look at Hitler. Hitler was the bad guy. And then there's sometimes we look around and we go, who are the good guys in this? Because we really don't know. So I thought it was profound, Hatter. Absolutely well written and profound.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, there's nothing more. Politicians that benefit financially during war, it cringes me inside. The people that thought they were doing something by greeting the soldiers that came back from Vietnam in the airports, calling them child killers. This is the first time in my life I was disgusted. I remember it well. I didn't have to see any of that, but I well know what those soldiers must go through. And they've got all my respect.
Yeah.
And these little pussies that wanted to spit on them, I'll tell you what, you know, they wouldn't last 5 minutes in a war zone. So a little more respect. I'm sorry.
It was probably the Vietnam experience was probably the worst. The soldiers coming back at it, because they had done what they'd done and then had this huge issue with the general populace when they came back and it was dreadful. Now, I've got another caller. Hi, 270. How are you?
It would be me, Wayne Gent.
Mr. Wayne Gent, the man who's been on the front page of all poetry. Is that Mr. Wayne Gent in?
Mr. Work, I reckon. Yeah. It's a great poem. I think Hatter wrote a great poem right here. I've been reading it over, and it's wonderful. And he's right about everything. You know, the world's right now full of greed, and America and Australia's got to watch out what's going on, because people are joining forces, and it's going to be another big one, it looks like to me. We'll have to wait and see, but I love this poem. Great job.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thanks, Wayne. I think you're in a bit of a time crunch, Wayne. Is that right?
No, I went ahead and got food ready and served the plates and told him to take it home with him. And so I'm here, but I just ate real fast, so I'm kind of got a little indigestion, but I'm here. I'm fine.
You're okay? Okay.
If
you're okay, I was just going to have a quick gander at some of the World War One pieces, because the World War One was where the Anzac spirit sort of started, and we saw from Hatter's poem just the incredible amount of people who went over and were killed in that conflict. And so I was going to put Dave Muddy's poem on the board and do that next, and then come back. So this is War for Peace by Dave Muddy. It goes a little bit like this. Flares illuminate the sky, exposing the dark death. We gain 100 yards, yet we lose the innocence. Is it maggots devouring flesh for the will of prideful man? Artillery pounds relentless in silence to their breaths. When they tramp through mud, their plans became unstuck. As they go over the top, dreams are buried in the dread. Hurry drives them forward. Mankind goes backward in its step, fighting for what is right. It is the war for peace. In poem. Sweet. Did you want to say a few words about Dave's poem, please?
You know, I love the World War II poems like you do. This is very vivid. This is great imagery. Yet we lose their innocence. Is it maggots devouring flesh, or will or the will of prideful men. You know, the artillery and the silence to breaths when they tramp through mud. You know, this is, you know, every movie that we have seen, but when you, there's just something about watching a movie and reading a poet. A poet can take me and put me there and make me see what a man is doing, and just to feel that mud and that muck and courage that drives them forward. I think that is, it is such a great poem of imagery and sacrifice and feeling. You just feel what he writes, and such a short little poem, and he has you right there in the trenches with everyone. It's just a wonderful piece.
Yeah, great. Thanks, mate. Pat up. What did you think of Dave's piece? Oops. Maybe I can't ask Pat up.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm muted.
Maybe I can't.
Yeah, this sounds like more of a World War One. Sounds like a World War One,
yes.
Being that it was a trench war, the war to end all wars. It was not technology hadn't quite reached the battlefield yet in weapons of war. So it was a trench, muddy. Described the way they described it, the war to end all wars. I mean, my Lord, I can't imagine. This is well done, Dave.
Yeah, it is. Thanks, Heather. And Wayne, what did you think of Dave's piece?
I think it's a wonderful poem. All wars are sickening, but World War One, to me, was especially brutal. That's when they came out with the poison gas, and they came out with the machine guns and tanks and all the heavy weapons, and we're still fighting in the trenches, hand to hand. And also the flu came along during the war. It was really brutal on people. There's a whole lot of people lost their lives just through being sick, myself getting killed. And that's a bad war, a sickening war, and he did a good job bringing a lot of emotion to the war. I enjoyed the poem, and World War I is one I like to forget about, because it was a bad war, even though we won, but it's a bad war for brutality. Great job on the poem.
Thank you, Wayne. And look, I was going to do my one next, because in the poppy has become a symbol of World War One, and the poppies actually require there to be a sort of huge excavation of soil and dirt. And so when the war concluded, because there'd been so many shells and bombings and explosions, there were these amazing fields of red poppies, the most amazing fields that there'd been ever. And when Deb put this show together, she grabbed pictures from young Australians who'd done images of Anzac Day, and one of them was this one, and I really loved it. This is When Poppies Grow by me. Goes a little bit like this. In red fields, the wind broadly measures some peaceful scenes captured in oil by great artists whose works treasure. Instead, the earth here faced is poor. By the fusillades of cannons and rifles, whose noises rebound upon few trees. The trunks gnarled, leaves, but trifles, explosions fierce while lives did cease. Of the artists who painted flowers, in blue and pink shades gathered tight. Now in wild rose poppies into towers, spurred on by destruction and blood. Khaki and mud left behind innocence, and those gentle colours are here. Crosses and memorials join presence, young, lain perennial in those fields. In pain. Deb, did you want to say a few words about this one?
Yeah, I think this one came out excellent, and of course your rhyme and flow is always spot on, but like it's the details, especially how it refers back to the prompt as the artist hand painted the flowers in blue and pink shades gathered tight. now in wild rose, poppy into towers, spurred on by destruction and blight. And in that part at the end there, it's sort of like the beauty of those robes, but yet they stand for the destruction and blight. So it's a sobering thought that something so beautiful can symbolize something so tragic. But like I said, I really like how you pulled all the details in, but you did it from an artist's perspective and from the and referring back to the art. And I think you did it quite well.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you. And what did you want to say a few words about this one?
I love that you bring out that poppies are, you know, the flowers of dichotomy in their own right. They represent such beauty and yet can bring such pain, or they bring relief of pain throughout history. So I find this kind of double entendre of what they can be and what they represent very interesting, and I kind of love the way you put it there. Those gentle colors of wheels, crosses, and memorials joining presence, young, lean, perennial in those fields, because I've always seen the poppy as the flower of all dichotomies, its beauty, and the fact that it can relieve pain, yet can be the cause of so much pain. So, very beautiful.
Thanks, mate. Okay. I'm now going to turn to a soldier who was there in World War One in the Western Front, and that soldier went on to write poetry. His name was Leon Gallop, and he was a South Australian, and he, I think, reflected where everybody had got to by the end of World War One. And what he saw in his experience. This is very simply called Murder, and the poem goes like this. Upon the threshold, red-eyed murder stands, fresh from his slaughterhouse of human meat. Blood on his broken teeth and on his hands, blood on his nails and on his purple feet. With hollow voice he speaks and sickening breath, the way there is, the only way is death. The dead will rise no more, the dead are dead. Spared will creep behind the sparer's back and breathe their plots and stab the dead are dead and lie along the safe triumphal track. The young-eyed babe will lisp its little tales. The loving girl will slay her mane in bed, kissing his savage mouth the victor files. At mercy's seat, the dead are safely dead. In poem. And I think if you've been through that, that's probably the headset that you're in. Hatter, did you want to say a few words about that poem by Leon Keller? Uh-oh.
Unmuted.
There we go.
The totality of in reality of war, you have to be there to understand what it's like. You can try to imagine, but I don't think you can't even come close. And this speaks of it. The dead are safely dead. It's like, very good.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, agreed. Wayne, did you want to say a few words about this piece?
Well, it's a wonderful poem. The war is just, he had a good way of writing about the war and stuff. I don't know, it's just a good poem. I'm kind of tied up with I'm all talking about thoughts and everything about everything that goes on in war, and I didn't pay attention, to be honest with you. I had some on my mind. So it was a good poem. I got a lot on my mind right now.
Yeah. Look, it's a great. It was Yeah, it was a really interesting, poem. On the board, I've actually got the book there, The Songs of the Campaign by Leon Gellert. So I've got the first edition of this book. The interesting thing, though, I hadn't realised, but the interesting thing was that this book was bought for the 27th Australian Infantry Battalion and showed up there in France in 1919. If you look at the cover and the picture I took. And so this book was there for soldiers to read who were waiting to come home after the war finished, which is kind of interesting, in the 27th Australian Infantry Battalion Library. So it's interesting what you find when you go have a look. So, anyway, there you go. So now I might at this point grab your piece, Blaine, and put that up on the board. And I put a SoundCloud as well.
AP, I don't want you playing my poem tonight because I wrote about the wrong holiday. I didn't write about the right holiday, so I want to skip the poem tonight. I don't want to get played. I wrote about Australia
sure.
instead of.
Okay.
I wrote about the wrong
okay.
holiday.
Okay. No, we can do that. We can do that. Well, that's not a problem at all. So thank you. So if that's the case, I am going to go to Sweet Pea's poem with that perfectly adorable puppy dog image, Sweet. And I've put that up on the board now, Sweet. Hello, Sweet.
I have that one and I have a new one. Do you want me to read them back?
Which one did you want to do? Well, maybe.
Okay. They're both kind of short, so. This one is Heroes Come With...
Let's do...
Want me to do the other one? All right.
Let's do the two together, yeah?
Okay, that's fine. I'll do this one.
Okay, cool.
This is his Heroes Come With Four Paws and 21 Gun Salutes. His nose was cracked and dry, for water was in short supply. His paws cut and raw, marching on duty bound. Guarding his troops, his life for theirs, was a mission of trust and love. Guns and bombs, the noise never stopped to calm him down. Body ramped day and night, fighting to find the enemy's wrongs. Fields of IEDs to blow up his men. One wrong guess, and all is gone. Suicide disaster stops before the gate, snitched on by a howling mate, but there is time to celebrate. With tennis balls and peanut butter Kongs and swimming dates, 700 men he saved, warning them to back away. Traps and bombs had been laid, warnings he did display, expressing danger when a sniper struck him down. A unit of his brothers saluted as 21 guns laid him down in peace. One lone soldier held his collar, tears rolling down from his eyes, touched his coffin to say goodbye. He took his fleece and looked down at his knees, and through a pump he whispered, "Someday soon you'll be the hero your daddy was to me." End poem.
That's a lovely piece. I loved the image and I loved your response. So it was real and heartfelt and touching and yeah, just lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah. You want to say a few words about that?
Yeah, you know, I really love the poem all the way through, but there's something endearing about that ending. He took his leash and looked down at his knees, and to a pup, he whispered, "Someday you'll be the hero your daddy was to me." And that part just chokes me up. It's an absolutely gorgeous poem, sweet, and an amazing tribute to that art. Oh, and AP, check your studio.
Got it. Thank you. Wayne, what did you think of Sweets, please?
He had to go.
Oh, he had to go. Okay. Hatter. Can you say a few words about Sweets, please?
Yeah, the service dogs, dogs of war, we should, you know, the problem the military had was getting those dogs back home. And I cannot believe in such a callous manner being what they contributed to saving lives. Those dogs were damn heroes. And whether the dogs knew it or not, we should know it.
Yes.
And I'm sure if I was at war, I would be one of the dogs. I'd have a dog. I'm sure I would be one of those canines. And that would just tear me apart to see him die and be killed. It brings up the image of the service dog standing next to the coffin.
Yes.
And, you know, won't leave, yes. Won't leave him. Just heartbreaking.
Don't make me cry, Hatter.
No.
I already am.
No,
sorry.
You don't go there, Hatter. Thank you. And, Sweet, you've now got a second piece. I think this is a new one, isn't it? From what I can say.
Yes, it is. Yes. Unfortunately, I didn't
okay.
put a dog on it, so I apologize. But it's the same picture of the dog.
No. All good.
Okay, this is Sweet Girl, We Are Home. When the gods turn their backs, skies grow black. A canvas for red shower bombs, sparklers, and missile fire shooting stars. Hard rock songs of bullet ballets. The oomph of the cannon fire. The deep guttural screams of soldiers dying. A battleground anthem plays on. Pushing the enemy line, marching forward. Her gray and black body staying rigid, eyes wide open, nose sniffing out round bombs, inches from her paws, edging us cautiously forward. She laid her body down, ending the marching sounds. Generals to PFCs heeded her every warning. Sergeant Peter kneels and calms her, runs his hands down her back. A rise of his hands, troops launch grenades, fire eats the land. Barracks on R&R. Time to shower, make calls to home, shoot the breeze. Sniper in a tree, no one, God, my spelling's awful, did see. Maddie jumps the fence, climbs a tree, brings down one bloody enemy. Victory is short, lived in a soldier's mind. Pride turns to horrific memories. Battle cries and scenes left scarred on eyes are forever left in their burden. Calm down, my sweet girl. I promise it's just thunder. We are safe and warm. Rest your old bones. You're in my home. Lay your head down. I will keep you safe now. There are no enemies to be found. Sleep deep and sound. You are safe, my sweet girl. We are home. And home.
It's the experience of being in a battle in a war. I think you picked up really well this. And that sense of victory being short lived in a soldier's mind. I love that. And pride turns to horrific memories, and I think that's absolutely true. The people were scarred by these experiences, and I think you picked that up really well. Seth, did you want to say a few words about this piece?
Yeah, Sweet. Both of these poems that you wrote to this are amazing. This is the one that I got a private reading for, and it hit me just as hard, especially towards the end there, calm down, my sweet girl. I promise it's just thunder. We're safe and warm. Rest your old bones here in my home. Lay your head down. And you know, you think of how certain noises might trigger PTSD in a vet, but you don't often think about the fact that that the service animal too, you know, and that stanza just really grabs my heartstrings. Amazing, right?
Thank you.
And Hatter, did you want to say a few words about sleep second pose?
Yeah, there's been a couple of presidents that have stated to the fact that the nation is judged by how it treats its animals, or how it treats the living things that cannot defend themselves. I remember a story of a guy was able to get his service dog back to him, but he was kicked out of where he was living because they didn't allow animals, and he was on the street with his dog. I think this speaks of that. It's the dog can have post trauma also. Oh yeah, make me cry, sweets. Thanks.
I'm sorry, Hatter.
Thank you, sweet. I'm now going to turn to the board. There's a brilliant song called "The Band Played Waltzing Matilda" by Eric Vogel, and I'm going to play that now, and then come back and do a few more poems. Here we go now.
I wrote this song in 1971. Now, the mathematicians will work out that was 38 years ago. Can't believe that, but this is how old this song is. And I wrote it after I saw my first Anzac Day march in Australia, which was in Canberra in 1971. And I wrote this song, and here it is. Next year, John and I celebrate our 30th anniversary together. I bought him a gold watch. I bet you're glad I came into that Salvation Army hostel, huh?
And rescued me.
Now when I was a young man, I carried me pan, and I lived the free life on the rover. From the Murray's green basin to the dusty outback, oh, I waltzed my Matilda all over. Then in 1915, my country said, son, it's time you stop rambling, there's work to be done. So they gave me a tin hat, and they gave me a gun, and they marched me away to the war. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as the ship pulled away from the quay. And amidst all the cheers, the flag waving and tears, we sailed off for Gallipoli. How well I remember that terrible day, how our blood stained the sand and the water, and of how in that hell that they call Suva Bay, we were butchered like lambs at the slaughter. Johnny Turk, he was waiting, he drained himself well. He showered us with bullets, and he rained us with shell. And in 5 minutes flat, he'd blown us all to hell. Nearly blew us right back to Australia. But the band played Waltzing Matilda. When we stopped to bury our slain, we buried ours, and the Turks buried theirs. Then we started all over again. And those that were left, we tried to survive in that mad world of blood, death and fire. And for 10 weary weeks I kept myself alive, though around me the corpses piled higher. Then a big Turkish shell knocked me off overhead, and when I woke up in the hospital bed and saw what it had done, oh, I wished I was dead. Never knew there was worse things than dying. For I'll go no more waltzing Matilda. All around the green bush far and free, to hum tent and pegs, a man needs both legs. No more waltzing Matilda for me. So they gathered the crippled, the wounded, the maimed, and they shipped us back home to Australia. The armless, the legless, the blind, the insane, those proud wounded heroes of Sula. And as our ship sank into circular quay, I looked at the place where me legs used to be, and thank Christ there was nobody waiting for me to grieve, to mourn, or to pity. But the band played Waltzing Matilda as they carried us down the gangway. But nobody cheered, they just stood and stared. Then they turned their faces away. And so now, every April, I sit on me porch and I watch the parade pass before me. I see my old comrades, how proudly they march, reviving old dreams of past glories. The old men march slowly, old bones stiff and sore, the tired old heroes from a forgotten war. And the young people ask, what are they marching for? And I ask myself the same question. But the band plays Waltzing Matilda. The old men still answer the call. But as year follows year, more old men disappear. Someday no one will march there at all. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come waltzing Matilda with me. And their ghosts may be heard as they march by that billabong. You'll come waltzing Matilda with me.
Eric Bogle, I listened to that many, many times when I was a child because it was one of my father's favourite songs. Now, Wayne, welcome back.
Well, I had to hang up. I had to hang up to get my poem. I couldn't find it while I was talking on the phone. So I hung up to get my poem.
No, it's all good. All good. And you've got your poem, Brothers Forever, and we've got it in the studio. So I was going to play that next one.
Okay, this poem is about two brothers. One's called New Zealand and one's called Australia. So just to know what it's about.
Okay. No, perfect. Okay, well, here we go now.
This is called Brothers Forever. The April night was young, with a pleasant view. Me and my younger brother, May 2. The purple hue made a perfect night to leave. It didn't take long for little brother to believe. We sit on the hillside, gazing at the moon. Thought it was our time to leave soon. We were excited to see our future ahead, but I knew it wouldn't be hard to end up dead. And even though I was older, he was the best looking, and I was known for the Barbie with the best at cooking. We made up our minds we were going to live free. Little brother had a lot of zeal and looked up to me. At last we were independent, decided to stay that way. We landed on troubled shores early one day. Sitting there was adventurous and small, but gave it all. My nickname is Down Under, responded to the call. To the best ever, happy ends our day, brothers. Ian?
Thank you, Wayne. I love the guitar in the background too, it's really cool. Because we have together, Australians and New Zealanders, wandered the corners of the earth together and to do our best, as you said there, and we have got a very strong affiliation because of that, I have to this day, so great poem, thank you. Deb, did you want to say a few words?
Yeah, you know, when the poem is awesome and the details, and I love the fact that you researched to, because, you know, you most of us until these shows had no idea what Anzac Day was. But what got me the most is your response to my original comment. And it said, I didn't know anything about the holiday, but thanks to the show, I now have an idea what the soldiers went through. And I think that is awesome in itself. And so are you. But the poem is great. The respect and the appreciation for what you learned is showing in it. You did a great job. I'm glad you went and found it.
Thank you.
And, Sweet, did you want to say a few words about this piece?
Yeah, I like the camaraderie. I like how you... First, I like the fact that one of them's good on a Barbie. Because that bitch, no, I'm just kidding. Anyway, I do like the depth of it. I love how you just make everything seem like no matter what's going on in the world, there's always a friend. There's always somebody that has our back. There's always somebody that's there. we always talk globally so much. But in reality, no matter how big we are, how small we are, we've always got somebody there to have our back. And I like how that kind of brings that together in the Wayne-ish way that you have that way about you. And
thanks
that's
very much.
Why I love you, Wayne.
Love you too.
Thanks, Wayne. Thanks, Wayne. And Pat, did you want to say a few words?
Yeah. You know, I had written in mine that we're the good guys. I know where they are. They're in Australia. I've mentioned it briefly, my visit to Australia, but I got to tell you how impressed and jealous I was on the country pride. It just oozes out of the streets. I mean, it was they were so kind, and I had people asking me if I needed help, being that I was having trouble moving around sometimes. Just out of the blue. I didn't know these people, but they were worried about me. AP, tell me that you didn't have the incidents at the airports for Vietnam vets, right? That didn't happen down there, right?
No,
of course
it didn't.
Of course it didn't. And if I had set my goals early in my life to go to Australia, see what it was like. I wish I had done that so much earlier in my life. I'm sure I would probably be living down there. It's a beautiful place, beautiful people, and Americans could learn a lot about how to respect your countrymen. Thank you. Great poem.
Thanks, Adam.
Okie doke. So now I have a special poem. We turn to World War II and a place called the Brook, which was in Western Africa. This is a poem by W.J. Boyle called This Place They Called the Brook. It goes a little bit like this. There's places that I've seen I didn't like too well. New England's far too booming cold, and winter's hot as hell. The Walgett beer is always warm in each this something creek, but each and all are perfect to this place they call the Brook. We reckoned our Gagala was none too flash a place, our Adam and better from were in the blooming rose. At the towns this side Benghazi we hadn't time to look, but I'll take my oath they're better than this place they call the Brook. I've seen Australian dust storms that make the earthworks and fires work. Here there's enough inside a shirt to smother all of birth. Do diggers clean their dugouts and that blanket out they shook? The colonels perished in the dust in this place they called the Brook. There's millions teetotalers who have all kinds of drink. There's wives who pour the comforts of bottles down the sink. This place would suit them nicely with scorch in every nook. It booze as rare as hen teeth in this place they call the Brook. There's centipedes like pythons and countless hordes of flies. As big as poodle dogs they come a-snapping round your knees. And scorpions large as hyenas invade us, though it's crook. There's surely lots of livestock in this place they call the Brook. The shells are large and frequent and they whistle overhead. They go into your dugout and find shrapnel in your bed. And when the snookers dive on us, our tents are all forsook. We're down our holes like rabbits in this place they call the Brook. Sometimes we go in swimming and float about at ease. The water clear as crystal and nice clean solid breeze. When down comes the blasted Herman and we have to swing our hook and dive through to the bottom in this place they call the Brook. I really got to know this place was meant for you and me. This return to the Arab and he knows what he can do. Of all its imperfections I could write a blanky book. We've called it lots of other names. This place they call the Brook. In poem. Now, interestingly, that was written by W.J. Boyle, but it was W.J. Boyle was not his real name. Anna? is not his real name. Do you know what his real name was, W.J. Boyle?
I'm a little lost
his
on
his real name. Sorry?
Mm-hmm. Banjo.
His real name was Hugh Patterson. It was his son. It was Banjo's son.
Oh, really? Hugh Patterson. Oh.
It was Hugh Patterson.
Where is the brook?
In Northern Africa.
Okay.
It was the same place that my uncle served in the field ambulance. They got surrounded by the Germans for 6 months. And they were teased by the Germans and said that they were just rats, you see. So there you go. That was the only known poem by Hugh Patterson, because he kept on doing poems and destroying them because they weren't as good as what his father's were.
Wow. So like Libya, Egypt, southern Africa.
So, there you go. Hugh Patterson was the true author of that piece. Now, Deb, if we want to do your piece on the Ratchet book next.
Sure. Let me grab that now.
Yeah, I got one that I wrote for tonight. I think I posted it in there.
You mean
yes, I saw that, Hatter. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, yeah. I chose the art because of actually some information that you shared about a relative, AP. And this is called Nightmares of Death Plague the Rats of Tobruk. And here we go. Balancing a bandaged digger with wounds in view, blood stains the uniform of the medic and red flows. Crimson marks the military horse and saddle too. As they gallop, the wounded soldier's pulse slows. Blood stains the uniform of the medic and red flows. Wet marks the saddle as red puddles on battlefields. As they gallop, the wounded soldier's pulse slows. Now death plagues nightmares that the war yields. Wet marks the sands as red puddles on battlefields, bodies dot trails leading to the army medic's home. Now death plagues nightmares that the war yields, as veterans see remnants of war as they roam. Bodies dot trails leading to army medic's home. Crimson marks the military horse and saddle too, and veterans see remnants of war as they roam. Balancing a bandaged digger with wounds in view. And so.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. It was damn hard there in Tobruk. My great uncle was there, and he was in the field ambulance, and they had coats like everybody else, and they were identified because they had little patches on their shoulders as being medical staff. And I'm just going to show you a picture of how small those insignia were, because they were tiny. And in the the desert, and you know, after a couple of hundred yards away, I'm not sure anybody could have seen that these soldiers were medics and not soldiers, because that these things were tiny. They weren't even a full cross. They were two half crosses worn on the shoulders. And I'm just going to show, I'm just putting up a picture on the board now that shows my Audi car keys and these two little that they used to wear on their coats that signified they were medics. And they're the actual woolen symbols, and it just blows me away every time. So thank you, Deb. Hatter, did you want to say a few words?
Yeah, about the patches there. It seems to me that any enemy that we approached did not understand or didn't care about conscientious objectors or the thought of marking the medic that it wasn't armed. They put hits out on the dogs in Afghanistan, in Iraq.
Yeah.
They were sniping dogs, yeah.
Yeah.
They were such an effective... But the... Now, Deb, you said the plague of rats in Tobruk. I missed what you were talking about with JP before. He had mentioned his relative being a medic. Was he a conscientious objector?
No. He'd been a pharmacist before the war, so he was a chemist. And so to him, it made the most sense to join as a medic because he would be able to, you know, use his pharmacy skills. Yeah.
They carried a weapon, though, right?
No.
I think that's what conscientious objector is. Conscientious objector doesn't fight. He just saves lives.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what he did. He didn't carry a gun. No.
Yeah, Deb did a good job on describing.
He did get separated from his lines for seven days. Hatter. And
he was
for the same again. He was in no man's land for 7 days. Yeah. And he crawled his way back.
Too,
yeah.
What we call it Purple Heart. What's the Australian medal?
Good question, Hannah. I'll find out for you. Give me a tick.
Just curious.
So, he was a tough guy, but he got beaten up really badly by the war, and was never the same again. Wayne, did you want to say a few words on?
Yes, I would. This poem says, "Give me chills. The details of the description were amazing and sobering. Poem stands me kind of war is true to hell. Great job on the way you wrote this, Deb. I like what you said, wet marks, the sand, it's red pebbles, there's red puddles on the battlefield, bodies dot the trail leading to medics' home." That's a hard statement to swallow. It's a good job, and it's a touching poem. Enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Deb. And I have put up a piece, Hatter, that you had on the board. This is Repeats in Code, The Isle Eyes. Now, did you want to read this, or did you want me to read it for you?
I'd like you to read it, but I'm going to warn you that the cadence might be a little off.
Oh, okay.
And I remember the last time I threw one at you. Yeah, let you know.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, thank you. So this is Repeats in Code, The Isle Eyes, for Hatter. And it goes a little bit like this. The word from the islands, they are here, they are here. The crackling air repeats in code. To the last man, mate, if not for them, the beaches are lost. Pray the midway the Americans take. We stand our ground in prayer today. Hidden back within the caves as the eye light, Pacific waves, the colours north remain the same, a dread of smoke will forever stain. Yellow fever, then malaria, sweats nothing, dries out, holds the sands of Sydney, the English will be a while. Listen for the words, we must hear the Kiwis watch the strokes hunker down one more day, just one more night. The rising sun burns our eyes, the dawn whispers in code, the enemy is right next door. Hold the day, just one more time. My country in fear, pray history will tell the meaning of war we know too well. Our friends will die so that we live here, pray, live with the memories that keep haunting me. God save the Queen. 1944. End poem.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it was interesting times, Hatter. I mean, I think, you know, we the vision over in Africa, and we, because the Japanese started heading towards us, we said, look, that's coming back home. And so that division went straight from being cut off in Tobruk to being in the jungles of Japan. Unbelievable, really.
Yeah.
But it was, they were tough times. We were a long way from Britain. I think that was where the support of America counted a hell of a lot for Australia, because if it hadn't been for all of those aircraft carriers and battleships that were wandering around north of Australia, then I have no doubt that things could have turned out very differently. So it was appreciated then, and it's appreciated now.
Yeah, I remember the New Zealand, the Kiwis and the Aussies, they were the eyes of the oceans. And they were planted on these islands on the top of mountains,
yeah,
and to try to stay covert and not be seen. Detectable radios. Very brave. I think Peter Frampton played an Aussie, Isle Eyes, on Black Sheep Squadron. Did you ever watch that? Bob Black Sheep.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Peter Frampton played there.
Yep.
I guess they were, what did they call them? There was a term for them. I called them ILIs, because they were the eyes of the on my islands.
Yeah.
But they were just spotters.
Yes.
I couldn't find it.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah. Deb, did you want to say a few words about Hatter's piece?
Yeah, you know, Hatter, I think this is another one that is really, really an incredible write. You were on a roll on this particular day, and that opening stanza, especially the first line, the words from the islands, they are here, the crackling air repeats in code. And just the thought, can you imagine how they felt as they heard those words, they are here? You get a mixture of excitement and fear and trepidation, and I would imagine that there would be so many different feelings going through their minds as they stand their ground. God Save the Queen, 1944. With that closing, it reads like it could have been written by one of the soldiers on the battlefield. I think that it came out really great, Hatter.
Yeah, thanks. I asked AP when I wrote the first piece you wrote last year, if they were aware of the planned invasion of Japanese, and they were. Can you imagine being a homeland Aussie, praying that the English and the Americans can defeat the war in the Pacific? Otherwise, they were next. That must have been frightening.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, it was.
And
thank you, Hatter.
Probably
Wayne, do you want to say Did you want to say a few words?
I never could find a poem that on the postal board that I don't want to comment without reading the poem myself. Like my train of thought won't keep up with it, but I couldn't find a poem to keep up with it. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, well, I'm going to do two more poems. I'm going to do Anzac Day by Boada, the Cabra. We'll do that right now. And then we'll do a final piece that has the ode for the Australian Army and for the Armed Forces. This is Anzac Day by Boada, the Cabra. First bit like this. They were too young to die, too young to fight. They fought for their country and they were right. Too many were injured and far too many deceased, but they did it for us, so that we could live in peace. Only kids, most of them heading off to a world war, did the poor buggers know what they were fighting for. The Queen and country was about all they were told, spent weeks and weeks fighting in the heat and cold. These men and women were tough and mentally strong, didn't deserve to die, though had done no wrong. Some were lucky, I guess, others came home with injury. Poor buggers remembering, and there can be such a misery. On Anzac Day, we should thank them all, be so proud that we can watch them march with a respectful crowd. Who cares if diggers drink too much on their day? They fought hard for this country, and it should be no other way. So let them have a beer, play two up, and even have a bet. Because on April 25, people, I say, lest we forget. Living in this country could be different and awfully scary if it wasn't for the deeds of our brave soldiers and military. So please take a minute of silence and let's remember them. Fought and died for us, both courageous women and men. Make sure you all know what Anzac does really stand for. Proudly stands for Australian New Zealand Army Corps in Bowen. Deb, are you still with us or have you disappeared? She's gone. Okay, I know she had to go. Okie doke. Well, gentlemen, I have one more poem to do, and that is a poem that has turned into the Australian ode, and it's a poem For the Fallen by Lawrence Benton, and so I think it's the fourth stanza. This is the Australian Ode. So. I should say before we do this, there's no show tomorrow. Monday is the colour red. So come along, have a look at the board and get into Deb's show. Final poem for tonight. This is For the Fallen. It goes a bit like this. With proud thanksgiving, a mother for her children. England mourns for her dead across the sea. Flesh of her flesh, they were spirit of her spirit, fallen in the cause of the fray. Solemn the drums thrill, death's august and royal, sing sorrow into their immortal spheres. There is music in the midst of desolation and a glory that shines upon our tears. With songs of the battle they were young, straight of limb, true of eyes, steady aglow. They were staunch to the end against odds uncounted. They fell with their faces to the foe. They shall not grow old as we others grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. They mingle not with their laughing comrades again. They sit no more at familiar tables at home. They have no lot in our labour of the daytime. They sleep beyond England's home. But where our desires are and hopes are profound, so is a wellspring that is hidden from sight. In the innermost heart of their own land, they are known. The stars are known to the night. As the stars that shall be bright when we are dust, moving in marches upon the heavenly plain. The stars, they are starry at the time of our darkness. To the end, they remain. End poem and end show. So my thanks very much to Sweet, to Deb for putting up the show and for putting all the links to that artwork. My thanks to you, Hatter, for writing it up to you, Wayne, for your poem and for hanging around. It's been a wonderful episode of the show. It's always a joy to do the Anzac Day piece. So thank you to everybody for their contributions, and we will catch you for our regular open poetry show next week. Hannah?
Okay.
dug it up. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you in a week's time. Pleasure to do the show. Talk to you soon. Bye, everybody.